and I'm going to have an hour special on this particular topic now. I'm delighted to be joined today in the studio by Andrea McDermott. Hi, Andrea.
Hi.
And Andrea is from Anyman, and you may have heard before about an organisation called Amen, and Anyman is a rebranded version of Amen, who are an organisation who look after men who are the subjects of domestic violence. We're also hoping to be joined by Emma Reedy from Avenus down the road in there in Coolock, she was on with us before, and we said we'd have her in again. And with while I was doing research for the subject of domestic abuse, and we always think of it as women with domestic abuse, I saw that the figures was 1 in 3 people suffering or suffering the effects of domestic abuse are men. So I thought, wow, we have to get somebody in to talk about that. So Andrea, you're here today to tell us all about the services you offer and the actual problem that there is with domestic abuse. So firstly, tell us about Anyman and how you became Anyman.
Okay, so Anyman was originally Amen. And I suppose Amen started over 20 years ago. We decided on the rebrand because I suppose times are changing and Ireland is changing, and the name was quite old. We wanted to also show that domestic abuse can happen to any man, which is why the name is so important. Mm-hmm. We have every different type of man who calls us, whether, you know, no matter what your job is, no matter what your status is, it doesn't make a difference that domestic abuse can happen to absolutely any man. So we changed our service to our name to any man. And we also added more services to what we do. So originally we would have been a national helpline for domestic abuse. But while working with men who are suffering domestic abuse and through the calls, we noticed that men would call us for other issues as well. They wouldn't quite know who to contact. So it might be an issue from suicide ideation to not knowing how to complete a form to CV issues. Mm-hmm. So men tend to, from our experience, make that one call only. So we decided, rather than, you know, giving them a number to call, we would now contact the services for that man with his permission. So if a man contacts, no matter what the issue might be, whether, you know, it's he has a cancer diagnosis, we will make that call for him and find him the service for his particular issue.
Very good. And why the rebranding then?
Just to keep up with the times, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I mean, Amen, we were in a church, and our name was Amen, and that's where our office is, you know. So we felt we needed to also show that we had the LGBT community involved as well, you know. So we have the rainbow there, just to show that it can happen to anyone. So I suppose as time is changing and Ireland is changing, mm-hmm. we wanted to make it a little more inclusive for everybody.
Yes, I see. Very good. Yes. Now, the fact that 1 in 3, you would not think that that amount of men would be suffering domestic abuse. Mm. We always think of women as the gentler sex. And, tell me then what stories, like what people come to you with these people experiencing domestic abuse. And, of course, the fact that we say about women, the shame, they feel shame and they're afraid to go and do anything about it. I think with men, it must be even more so because we've always thought of them, I suppose wrongly so, because we're now seeing that men need to show their emotions, show their vulnerable side and cry a bit and not be this strong, you know, Neanderthal man that needs to be. And I think in that respect, then, that their shame must be more, that they're trying to be a proud man and a strong man, mm-hmm. and then to think that their spouse is abusing them and physically and mentally abusing them.
So. Yeah, yeah. Men find it really, really difficult to come forward for that reason, because men are seen as the strong person. You know, that they, as I said, we could have had, you know, a guardie come into us who are suffering from abuse. So they're out in the streets taking down criminals, and they're going home, and their partner is abusing them. We have a lot of physical abuse, but mostly it's the emotional abuse and the coercive control that men are suffering, who contact us, that are suffering. There's, I suppose, a lot of the stories that men would contact us with would be, you know, I don't know what to do about it. I can't talk to my family and friends about it. You know, I'm not going to be believed. Is a big one for men. They don't feel like they're going to be believed. And if they do, I mean, they're not going to chat in the pub about each other and say, my wife hits me. When they do, the old, I suppose, stereotypical was, you know, oh God, he's under the thumb. You know, and that's not the case at all. You know, he's not under the thumb. He's terrified of going home because he might get hit. A lot of men who speak to us tend to get, when there's physical abuse, it happens when they're asleep or when they're in a vulnerable situation. So, you know, so they could be scared of going home. They don't want to tell their friends. Their friends will think they're a big sissy, was you know, the word. You know, they feel effeminate if they come forward. The statistics show us that only 5% of men who are suffering from domestic abuse will actually come forward.
Right.
You know, so we need to, at any moment, we're going to try and, I suppose, get rid of that stereotypical and show the men that it does happen. It happens 1 in 3, as we said. The COSC statistics from 2005 have shown us since way back then that 1 in 3 men will suffer domestic abuse. So it is okay to come forward. You know, we need more than that 5% of men feeling that they can, you know, come forward and talk about what's happening to them.
Well, now we're actually joined now on the phone. Emma, are you there?
I am, Adrian.
Oh, hi. Good. Glad we were able to get you. Now, just getting back to we've just been discussing Anyman and the fact that 1 in 3 people suffering domestic abuse is male, and people would be shocked to hear that. But you there now in Avenus, and I love the name Avenus. I mean, that means joy or bliss. It's a lovely name that they've come up with. But you do see terrified women on a daily basis. So you've been in with us before, and have you seen an increase now in the numbers coming to you suffering from abuse?
Thanks, Adrienne. I suppose, first of all, with regard to the name, first of all, we ourselves went through a bit of a rebrand this year in our 31st year, providing a service to women and children. But the one thing that changed or remained was the name, because no matter how many focus groups we engaged with, people providing us with their insight in relation to what they wanted from a service, they wanted the name Evenus to remain. So while we changed the tag and the logo, the name itself has remained. And that's been very important to us, because for a lot of women and children, those, they're at a very hopeless point within their own journey. And an organisation like our own has to offer, by way of its service provision, hope, encouragement, support and empowerment in doing that. And that's really very important to us. In terms of, I suppose, the second part to your question there, the service that we provide and to what extent or how is it different this year to previous? I think we've seen a big growth in women and children accessing our support from a community-based perspective last year. Last year, we noted a staggering 56% increase in uptake from women and children accessing our service from their communities. And that's why, I suppose, from a community prevention point of view, it's been very important to us to naturally provide refuge and a 24-hour helpline to women and children, but equally to have a very visible and very accessible service provision for women and children based from their communities as well.
Well, I'd just like to go into, firstly, for people to, you know, recognising the signs. That's one thing that you have on your website there on Avenus. And perhaps maybe you might go into it, you know, because it does say, like, does someone you know put you down or make you feel bad about yourself, you know, frighten you by what they might say or do? Do they hit, kick or push you, force you to have unwanted sexual contact, control who you can or cannot see, or make you feel anyway unsafe? And I think looking at that on your website straight away, it gives people, even friends of people who might be seeing, you know, a helping hand to see the signs, to watch for them, even fear in somebody else, somebody becoming less than what they were. If you see somebody who was confident or exuberant, you as a friend can see when they are now becoming a shadow, I suppose, of their former self, that they're becoming more introvert, quiet, not saying things, not wanting to be part of the friend, the group. So it's a way of, I think, do you have things on your website as ways of people, friends or family members, being able to watch for those signs?
Yeah, I think that was very important to us when we thought about our website more specifically, in terms of trying to appeal to anyone that might be in a situation or a dilemma, as they might put it, in relation to being aware or having a knowledge that someone that they know or love is experiencing domestic abuse. Quite often, more than not, you know, people can be very aware of what's happening in an abusive relationship, but might not know what to do with that. So the website tackles or addresses what if you are in that situation, but like that, what if someone you know or love is in that situation? And I think that's really important for us when we think about the Ireland that we have now, because for a long time, domestic violence has been a very private and behind closed door issue. And a lot of what we've been trying to do in recent years is trying to get people to talk about it, to be more open with it, and not being a bystander to it. So if we're a bystander to it, essentially we're giving a perpetrator, to some extent or purpose, permission to continue what they're doing. And like that, it can be a very daunting or difficult situation for someone to have an awareness that someone they know or love are experiencing abuse, but therefore not to know what to do with that. So our helpline equally would offer family and friends of someone they know, you know, that maybe is experiencing abuse, to get some support or information in their own right. And like that, they can make contact through our website. I think you touched on the issue in its very essence, in that domestic abuse isn't obvious to everyone. And it might feel like that when someone is living in an abusive situation, that because things are happening in dribs or drabs, or maybe there's certain apologies that come afterwards or efforts to change behaviour, that it's only when, you know, an outsider looking in forms an opinion or offers some advice that it becomes very, you know, becomes to the person experiencing it something that they might think or contemplate further, that, okay, maybe there is a pattern here. Maybe I have been downplaying it. Maybe this is leaving me feeling like I don't have confidence in myself anymore, or I don't do the things I once did. So that gets people thinking about maybe what their experience is in the relationship, and slowly they might be able to put the definition of what's happening in that relationship as abusive. And that doesn't happen overnight. If we think about the motive of a perpetrator, we think about how it is a sustained pattern of abuse that happens over time. And that's why we welcomed the introduction of the coercive control under the domestic violence legislation, in that it's taken into consideration that, you know, abuse can be very hard to pinpoint sometimes. When you're thinking about your physical or your sexual, you might have an incident. But when you're thinking about your psychological or your emotional abuse, it might be a series of things that are happening daily or over a sustained period. So we welcome, you know, I suppose, domestic abuse being considered in all its forms, so that women like that, all victims of domestic violence can feel that if they want to access support, that they have the ability to do so.
Andrea, you had actually said that earlier before we came on air. You were talking about that, the coercive control. And I mean, it's like when we talk about mental health in itself, nothing has been done in a long time about mental health. It's under the carpet. You know, we don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
It's like you can see a hurt, you can see a cut, you can see somebody's broken their leg there, but when it's internally, you can't see it. So how now will this help? How will they be able to see or examine that person has, you know, this psychological
and the stereotypical idea of domestic abuse is somebody with bruising or with marks, and for many of the men, that's not what it is for them. The coercive control is a huge part of what they're suffering from. So you could have men who will contact us and they're not sure. They're thinking, you know, because, as Emma said, the abuser does this over time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of men doubt themselves. You know, they doubt this is happening. They're not sure an incident happens and then, you know, they kind of forget about it. So we would get calls where men are going, look, I'm not sure if I'm actually being abused, but I was on your website and I saw, you know, certain things that are happening to me and I ticked a lot of those boxes, you know, but I don't have any bruises, mm-hmm. you know. And we would explain to them, well, look, what is happening in the relationship, you know, and they would talk about, I've got €5 for petrol every week, and she checks the mileage to make sure she knows where I'm going. When I'm in work, I'm getting 30 phone calls a day, you know. I have to take a photograph of myself at my seat in work to prove that that's where I am. I'm told if I leave, I'll never see the children again, that she'll go to court and she'll take the children. I'm afraid to do anything, you know. She doesn't like my family, so I've no contact with my family because I was told I had to choose her and the children or my parents and my siblings, so I chose my children, you know. So there's so many different aspects of coercive control, the financial part of it, the emotional part of it, you know, being told you're a bad father all the time, being told you're useless at what you do, you don't earn enough money, you know, the constant put downs that eventually the man, you know, he feels, the men in our situation, they feel like, you know, this is true, this is what I am. They've lost, you know, all their self-confidence. They don't go out anymore. They, you know, there's a lot of physical symptoms then as well. You know, there's stomach cramps, there's weight loss, there's headaches, you know, all from the stress, you know, of what they're being put through. We would have HR service in jobs contacting us and saying, look, we had a guy who was, you know, he was a great, you know, employee, and then in the last 3 years suddenly he's late every day, he's getting phone calls, and when we tackled him on the situation, it turns out that he's been abused at home and he's been controlled and he has to contact home every 10 minutes or he has to, you know, part of the abuse was that she would hide his keys around the house and he would have to spend the morning trying to find his keys, so he would always be late for work, you know. So the emotional abuse,
wow.
Yeah, it can be, you know, there's a lot of aspects to what happens, you know, to men and women when they're being abused.
It's difficult, it's a terrible thing, and also, as you say, it's little by little, mm-hmm. over the years, and it just gets in on them or whatever, or it becomes a normality, it becomes a normal pattern, and then, as you say, it's only when they see something like that and go, oh my goodness, I am actually.
And a lot of men who contact us, they want to stay in the relationship, mm-hmm. you know, they're terrified of breaking their family, you know, they're terrified, there are no beds for men who are suffering domestic abuse in the country, there's no refuge, there's not even a bed, you know, so they've nowhere to go.
Yes,
as well.
I was going to ask you that, because at least with Avenus, the women go and they might be able to take them in to shelter, but there's only a certain amount that they can
absolutely
get beds for as well.
Yeah.
But yes, the men, how would they get out of the home, you know, and so where would they go?
So men who do decide that they need to leave the relationship, I suppose the reason they find it more difficult is that they can't take their children with them, because if they're going into homeless accommodation or if they're going into a hostel, or a lot of men end up on the streets, and they can't take their children with them, so they might be leaving them in a really dangerous situation. So that's why a lot of men will stay as well, mm-hmm. you know, that for that reason. If they do leave, unless they've got family members who will, you know, support them and take them in, mm-hmm. or, you know, they could end up in the homeless services. So what we would encourage is, you know, when the men talk to us, we will try and contact the homeless service in their area, you know, and see if we can get them a bed for the night. Hopefully moving forward with more funding, we're looking to see if we can have a bed in every county, even a B&B, so that a man can leave. He will go into that B&B for the night, and we will be with him within 24 hours to help him, you know, in whatever his situation or whatever his choices are, because they're always going to be his choices. Mm-hmm. So if a man contacts us, we're never going to tell him, you know, get out or you need to leave or whatever. It will always be his choice. Mm-hmm. So we can be there to support him, you know, while he's going through this situation or for whatever he decides he wants to do from there.
Yes, yes. Now, going back to the actual offence itself, and you might not want to come in on this. I can't believe that it's not an actual criminal offence. Now, there is new legislation, the Domestic Violence Act 2018, which has been ratified or commenced there in January of this year. But so it's difficult then to bring charges against somebody that doesn't happen. What happens?
Well, I think it's a difficult situation that a lot of women find themselves in our experience, because before a woman, just to give an example, for last year, you know, 23% of all women that we engaged in our service had experience of getting Gardaí out of their homes. And a further 25% had an experience of already going through the courts to get some form of protection. So what that tells us is that, you know, women are using the domestic violence legislation to get protection. When they call Gardaí, Gardaí are signposting them to the courts, like that, maybe where they get some advice from services they might disclose to, or services like our own, they're getting signposted and referred into the courts. The problem is, I suppose, that with the domestic violence legislation is that it's taken under the remit of family law, and it doesn't have automatically within it a criminal aspect, in which that if someone does, by virtue of the woman needing the protection in the first place, you know, does something to assault or hurt her, that they don't have any, you know, follow-up from a criminal point of view. And I think it's easier for Gardaí to naturally refer to the family law courts, because after an incident occurs, that's where a woman and a man can get the necessary protection thereafter. But it all comes back to the fact that, you know, is that protection providing victims of domestic abuse the necessary safeguards that they need in the aftermath? And we would hazard that it's not, if there is 23% of all our cases where women have orders and it just involves them going back and forth to court after incidents have reoccurred, and whereby Gardaí haven't, after the initial order being taken out or being obtained, they're not then taken on criminal proceedings. I think that's the key piece in it, is that there's one thing getting an order after a violent incident has occurred, and that's good, if it makes a situation safer. In the case that it doesn't make a situation safer, it's up to Gardaí to enforce that legislation by arresting the perpetrator and charging them for that infraction. But that isn't always happening as we would identify it. And that's where maybe it's not coming full circle, because, again, for the majority of cases that we come up against, leaving a relationship is one option regularly explored for the women we work with. That doesn't necessarily mean that's the end of the abuse, and the abuse can often and does often continue in many other forms thereafter.
Yes, but there's one change though in that legislation, isn't there, Andrea, with regards to the safety and protection orders, and I suppose just to let people know, the most important change is that all partners in an intimate relationship are eligible for safety and protection orders without the need of cohabitation. So that's something, that's a good change there.
Absolutely. So regardless of whether you're actually living together now or have a child with that person, you now are entitled, once you're in an intimate relationship, you can apply for any of the domestic abuse mm-hmm. orders, for the safety and the protection order to keep you safe. Because a lot of times, you know, you could be in a relationship with somebody and they are abusive to you. You're not living together, you know, but, you know, it's still a very difficult situation. We have men who will call, you know, and say that their partners are, you know, pacing up and down outside their house, you know, they're driving up and down, making sure that they're there. So they're still being controlled, you know, even though they don't live together, you know, mm-hmm. so there would be there would be a lot of that, which is great. There's also the Gardaí now have the power to, if they arrive at a house where there is a violent situation in the night, they can now enforce an interim barring order and remove the perpetrator from the home mm-hmm. rather than having to wait right. for a judge to do so, mm-hmm. which is really good as well. And we would be, I suppose, going into Templemore now to train the Gardaí in around making sure that when they do arrive at a domestic abuse situation, that they actually remove the perpetrator and not the victim. Because in some cases, when the Gardaí arrive and they don't know who the perpetrator or the victim is, a lot of times they'll remove the man anyway, because, you know, as stereotypical as the man is, you know, is the one who's the abuser.
Yeah.
And we have had men who were victims contact and say, look, when I called the Gardaí, I was the one who had to leave the home, mm-hmm. you know, or mm-hmm. when I've gone down to the Garda station and I've reported what's going on and I tried to make a log, that they actually, you know, they kind of sniggered and they said, oh, for goodness sake, you know, would you not, you know, talk to her, or, you know, look at the size of you and the size of her. And this has happened.
Yeah.
It is changing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely is changing. And we have some amazing Gardaí that we work with as well. But it does happen. And once that happens, the man is not going to go back again or call the Gardaí in a situation where, you know, he's in fear.
Yeah. Yeah. But
similarly, just in relation to the mm-hmm. experience that a lot of the women that we experience, you know, have in relation to Gardaí also, I think when you're at the receiving end of an abusive encounter or incident, it can be very difficult for the victim to articulate what has gone on. And often a lot of the women that we come up against will experience that or cite that, you know, because they were emotional or they, you know, the perpetrator gave a very convincing account, that somehow their experience was downplayed and therefore Gardaí were reluctant to act on that. So I think we'd be very supportive taking Templemore, because that training has been in place for some time, and taking Templemore out of it, we'd be very supportive of going into local Garda stations to adequately resource Gardaí that are frontline on a regular basis, to equip them with how they screen for and respond to calls involving domestic violence, sexual violence, because the response they give in that moment is absolutely crucial to ensure that people get the response they deserve, feel safe having enacted the Gardaí, and therefore can, you know, access the proper channels thereafter, like courts, like A&E, like GP and so on.
Definitely. I was feeling that, you know, these safety and protection orders that are given out and it's done through family court and that, that they're not really much protection in itself. You know, it's a piece of paper saying that, yes, that they're maybe barred from the home. They can't go near this person. They can't be within a certain space or whatever. But it doesn't stop them. It doesn't protect that person who has that safety or protection order from this person coming back and maybe killing them the next time they encounter them. Probably so enraged that they've been brought to court and that they've have this protection or barring order against them. So, you know, maybe they do need to make it a criminal act, that something else happens to that person, rather than, well, we've given you a barring order, we've given you a protection order against this person, but you still have to live in that same house in fear that this person mm-hmm. will come back. Yeah. And then, of course, we've got the new, they're going to, the family members, they're going to be consulted with regards mm-hmm. to domestic homicide. Because thank God we've only a few cases of it in Ireland, but a few too many. When you think of the Haw family and their three children, you know, in Cavan, and they were found dead. That was in August 2016, and the inquest following year that her three sons were unlawfully killed by the father Alan, the son who took his own life as well in the murder. But I mean, there's quite a number of these cases where fathers kill the wife and the children and then kill themselves, and you know, it's so sad because these people were probably going to the likes of yourselves, or as we say, holding it all in, ashamed not to let it out that they were being controlled, both psychologically or physically abused. And then this happens, and at the time when these things happen, the neighbours are, oh, and he's such a lovely man, you know. And this is the problem, that a lot of criminals go around and we don't see or know that they are doing the criminal acts, or that they end up murdering somebody. And it's like shock horror, I can't believe that lovely person, you know. And it's just, I don't know, it's frightening to think that it's going on. But it is good that the government is now planning to launch an independent study into introducing domestic homicide reviews to Ireland. So what do you think of that, Andrea, in what they're trying to achieve?
Yeah, absolutely. And it needs to be done. I mean, there has to be a study into what we're hearing so much about familicide. There's so many families around the country that this has happened to. I mean, the latest one, as we know, was the one in Cavan. And it does have to be looked at. It's horrendous, you know, where whole families are being wiped out, you know, when, you know, I'm sure there were signs beforehand, before these things happen. It's just people not picking up on them, or the person who is the one in fear and the one who's being controlled not feeling that they can come forward. They need to be able to be told and to see that it is okay and that there is help out there for anybody. You know, nobody should go through situations like that, you know, where children are being murdered. I mean, it's a horrendous situation. So it is needed.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So then through your website, Anyman, what other supports then are in place, and what else do you, where exactly are your offices?
Okay, so our office is based in Navan in County Meath, and the website is actually being worked on at the moment to add all the other services that we do. So we're based in Navan in County Meath. We have a national helpline there. Because our funding is quite small, and because we have a tiny staff, I suppose, our helpline is only at the moment from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. We're hoping to increase that going forward. We offer services as in one-to-one. So we have one-to-one clinics around the country. We have one-to-ones and drop-in service in Navan. So if a man is in that area, he can come in and sit down and talk. He can make an appointment or he can drop in. Mm-hmm. We have one in Galway, we have Limerick, we have Kilkenny, and we have a weekly outreach clinic in Dolphin House in Dublin. We offer counselling, so we have a counselling service for any man who might need it. We also offer a service to families, you know, so we have a lot of sisters who ring, a lot of mothers who ring, and family members who ring looking to talk about their sons, their fathers, you know, their brothers, so they can come in and talk to us as well, you know, and we can give them some information about how to keep their family members safe, you know, and how to talk to them around what's happening to them. We'll talk about now housing situations as well for men who can't leave, you know, who are unsure where to go, that if they leave the house, there's nobody, you know, there's nowhere for them to go, they'll end up on the streets. Mm-hmm. We have our court accompaniment service, where we will accompany a man to court if he's unsure of, you know, the court side of things, if he's unsure of the paperwork. We have a court accompaniment worker who will also go with that person to court as a moral support as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
very
the
good. It's a good service, and people need to know about it. There's one call, you can call this for support. It's 01 55 43 811. So that's a Dublin number, and that's 55 43 811. And it's a very good service. Now with Aveness, I'm going back to you, Emma. Mm-hmm. You have quite a number of services there as well. So do you want to tell people of how they can maybe get in touch with you with regard to your services?
Yeah, and having just maybe, Adrian, you asked Andrea, but just having just moved on from the Millified.
Yes, please, yes.
I think we can't underestimate, you know, the importance, you know, the importance of a review like this.
Yes.
You know, in Ireland and behind the Millified, we also have many femicides. And I suppose it would be remiss of me not to mention, you know, the gender-based violence and the phenomenon that is so deeply rooted in our society, and the fact that women are dying as a result of that. And you know, what I would like to express is that for violence of any kind, you know, it is a violation of a human right, and it's really important that we think about when we're building these services to challenge societal or community associations and myths and stigmas associated with how violence gets acted out within the home, within the community, and how it has a gender-based undertone to us. In relation to the services we have developed over the 30 years that we've been in operation, we've been able to expand and grow them based on the fact that we have a lot of women and children obviously seeking support, and we're also aware that for you know, a large percentage of all victims, that there's obviously a large number that don't reach out. What we do have at the moment is a refuge and a helpline service, and that carries a 24-hour and a national remit. And it's national because, as Andrea had touched on already, there are a shortage of refuge places around the country, and for that reason we have women, they may have to leave their county of origin in order to access safety in the immediate. And in addition to our national services, we have community services like outreach, clinics, a court accompaniment service, training. And they're all based from North Dublin, North County Dublin, and the North Inner City. The reason why we hold a catchment area as such to those kind of provisions that we provide at the moment is our demand is just simply so high that by offering a quality services, you know, service in areas that we can become very embedded, whereby we can build up great relationships with community groups, with professionals, we stand a better chance in a woman and child getting a very holistic service. And we are in the business, naturally, of supporting women and children in crisis. But our mission, as we would see it for Aveness, is that we take a woman and children from crisis to recovery and then to healing. Because we have an onus and a responsibility to tackle the issue as it presents, but we also have a responsibility to, you know, support women and children in their healing from violence as well. So our services would take on the ability for a woman at any stage within her journey to access the support that she needs and to tailor it accordingly to what those needs are, and then to obviously seek it for as long as she needs. And that's emphasis, I suppose, in the number of families that we you know, supported last year in our community work alone. Through our frontline service delivery, we supported 634 families directly, and that was a rolling number of families of 1,143. So it's a very busy service for what it has to be. Like Andrea touched on, we're not all adequately funded, so we're doing the best we can with the resources that we have behind us.
Yes. No, you're doing a fantastic job. But I just want to touch back now. We've another 15 minutes we're around. I want to touch back to the actual Domestic Violence Act of 2018. Mm-hmm. And I just speak to both of you so you can come in as you wish. I cannot believe that it's replacing a Domestic Violence Act which was from 1996. Now, there was an amendment or something from 2002, but I mean, gosh, that's a long time waiting for some regulation to be put in place. And the main things I've seen in it was to do with coercive control, and also then the power to arrest for a breach of an order under a Domestic Violence Act. So they're two major changes within it. So maybe, Andrea, yes. Do you want to cover the coercive control and the facts of it being an offence now? It says here what it's an arrestable yes. offence, liable for conviction or a fine. So
it's gone on. 72% of the men who contact mm-hmm. any man are suffering from coercive control. Mm. So what that would mean is that they would be controlled into doing something by a threat. So a lot of men would be told, you know, if you don't do as I'm saying, you're never going to see your children again, I'm going to take them and I'm going to leave. Or a threat of violence to make them do something, or a threat of ousting them for something they might have done. You know, I'm going to ring your boss and tell your boss that you're an abuser. We have a lot of men who contact us who tell us that their partner is the one who's saying that they're being abused, you know, and they're going and they're obtaining orders as well, you know, as another form of abuse. So the coercive control is making them do, I suppose, something that they don't want to do with an underlying threat behind it, without the threat ever actually happening. So men who go to court or who go to the Gardaí and are trying to say that this happened, it's very difficult to prove. Mm. You know, it's difficult to show because there's like that, there's no bruising, there's no anything to show for it. So we suggest that men log everything. You know, they log down all incidents that are happening. They keep logs with their GP as well if they can, that they try and talk to family members about what's happening, that they keep, you know, there is the new Bright Sky app now that was launched, and that's an app you can download onto your phone. And there's a part of that app, there's a log book in it. So when they can write in there, they can put photographs in there, they can put anything into that, and then they can access it any time they want. So it's not necessarily keeping a journal, which could be taken as, you know, as we spoke about earlier, that could be taken from them. So the coercive control part of it is when they do have enough evidence then to go to court and prove that this is happening to them, that they can obtain a protection or a safety order based on that. And then their partner knows that if the Gardaí come, if they do abuse that, that the Gardaí can come and they can say, look, I have a protection order, I've been getting threats, you know, the court has believed me, and now I need to use this protection order.
Mm-hmm. And then with regards to the power to arrest for a breach of an order under the Domestic Violence Act, is this something different to what, or were they always able to do that? Did they not have that power? Emma?
Gardaí always had the power, but it makes it very clear under the new mm-hmm. legislation their obligations under it. Before, it was automatically taken from a family, you know, family remit into a criminal, and that the transaction or the crossover had to happen. But the domestic violence legislation spells it out now, the power of the Gardaí to arrest under actions perceived under that legislation to carry a wrongdoing. And mm-hmm. So it was quite important that it does spell it out, I think, as Andrea touched on. But, you know, obviously worth mentioning the difference between coercive control and any other criminal act, which is quite important, is that in criminal terms, when one person breaks the law for doing one thing, then that's punishable. Whereas under coercive control, a woman or a victim, a man, can go back and log back a series of incidents that would render, I suppose, a person being in breach of that legislation. So that's really an important thing, because up to now, like say if your house is burgled, you know, it's one time you're making a complaint in relation to that one thing, and then you're getting someone criminalised on behalf of that. Whereas now, under coercive control, you're getting a lot of things that build an overall picture that can include for a criminalisation in that. So it's really important. It takes into consideration the whole experience of someone that experienced the whole lived experience for someone that goes through abuse as it's experienced under coercive control, and then obviously provides them with the ability to get, you know, someone sanctioned for that.
Yes. Well, to me, when I heard, you know, that it's not a criminal offence, to me, it's strange that it isn't, just because you're married to this person or you're in a relationship with this person, that it's like going back to the olden times of you were a chattel or something, or you were the property of this person, and that they could basically do what they want. It just seems crazy that somebody who is either mentally or physically abusing somebody, that it is not a criminal offence to do so.
I think, though, Adrienne, what we'd like the best of both worlds when we think about the issue of domestic abuse. Mm-hmm. We do want victims of abuse to have easy access to courts that aren't criminal in nature,
right?
Where they can go in and easily obtain the legislation that will make them, mm-hmm. or going well, if it works well, safer in their homes. And then when someone breaches that, to have then the criminal aspect take over. And I think it's really important that we don't dilute, for any victim of domestic abuse, the thought of engaging a legal support is an incredibly daunting one. You know, if we just take what it involves for anyone reaching out to access support, to go that one or a few steps further to access a court clerk, to speak to a judge, and then to ring for Garda support thereafter. It involves telling your story or your experience over and going through all those same doubts that you've gone through when you're contemplating what's going on in the relationship, which is, will I be believed? Will that person kind of, you know, say that in response to anything I say, and then everything I've gone through will be downplayed? And he'll make me appear mad, and he will, you know, take my children from me. These are all things or messages that go through a person's mind when they're contemplating talking about their situation, on the basis that, you know, for a perpetrator, and what happens in an intimate relationship is that where there was once or is trust, that person knows a great deal about that other person. And that includes having sensitive information known by the other person, and all the while knowing that if pushed or triggered, that will mean that information, maybe sensitive or otherwise, will be shared. And that carries in its own right a major burden for anyone that's contemplating whether or not they should reach out or access support. And we'd always say that by accessing services like our own, including Any Man, that there is that possibility that in the confidence of a support worker, you can kind of gain that support, get that reassurance, and get a level of empowerment in relation to what your journey involves, or what the road involves lying ahead, and support in getting the right protection for you. But it is key that we think about the access to support under Domestic Violence Act in the initial stages being under the family law remit, in that it doesn't involve someone going into a public or an open court. And if someone breaks that legislation or that order thereafter, then it is up to Gardaí to take that responsibility from the victim and to proceed with the criminalisation of that person in a criminal court. So there's just that key distinction, I think, when we're looking at the Domestic Violence Act.
Right. Yes. So it's an easier way of going about it, because it's such a frightening thing, yeah, anyway, to have to to say it's happening, or to admit it's actually happening, yeah, and then to go get the help, or to have to leave your home, or that it's such a frightening ordeal.
Explain to strangers, you know, this is what's happening to me, and then taking that step. It's very daunting going into court,
yeah,
you know, and it's the experience is horrendous for men and women who have to take that step and go into court, and it's their personal lives as well. And as Emma said, you know, the fear of, they don't know, you know, they've been in an intimate relationship for many years probably, you know, what's going to come out and what they're going to say about them as well, you know. So there's many factors as to why men and women don't come forward, you know, and speak about this, or take that step.
And as you say, I mean, like, it's the father of their children, or it's the wife of their the mother of their children, whichever, or just even if there are no children involved, it's the person they fell in love with, and you know they still love them, and it's hard to admit that that's actually happening.
Absolutely.
So yes, it's a very frightening. Absolutely. Frightening situation.
We did see last year, which was reported on last week, we saw an average 50 applications under the Domestic Violence Act being taken out every day. So we know, you know, for all the people that aren't accessing the courts, we know there is a high percentage accessing the courts, but it is imperative that they get the right responses the first time round. Because what we know about, we don't have as much research in Ireland, but what we know across the water is that for, I could speak of female victims of domestic abuse, that then on average they will experience 35 physical assaults before they even contact the police. So we need this legislation to work. We need women and men to get the right response when they go before a judge. And we need judges and all people involved in the judicial process to take and leave judgments out of it. We need them to access adequate training and to be able to do little or no further harm when you have an applicant and a respondent in the same room together.
Definitely. So, we're coming up to the hour now, but I want to let everybody know then how they can get in touch with your various services. So, Avenus, you've a 24-hour support helpline. So what's that, Emma?
The 24-hour helpline, the number is 01-867-0701. And that's really for anyone that has a need to access support in relation to a direct or an indirect experience of domestic abuse. It can be something that's happening on an ongoing basis, or it can be a past experience. So if anyone needs support, we'd encourage that as a first step. We recognise that it's incredibly hard for anyone to bear the thought of picking up the phone, but picking up the phone can be an enormous first step in getting the right support that you need in your situation.
And I mean, even if you're a friend or family member, and you're frightened for your daughter,
exactly.
Friend, sibling, that you can ring that number and you'll give them advice there as well.
But as we said, there is always people that know of situations, and we touched on the Clodagh Hall case, but it was only when that documentary came out at the end of the year that it was family members and friends of Clodagh that were able to, in hindsight, when reflecting back on, able to think about where psychological or coercive control played a major feature in their relationship. And I think that it's really important we think about, well, what are we looking at when we look at a relationship playing out? Or not to put too much of the lens always on intimate relationships, because we deal with a lot of family relationships as well, where it involves parents and children, that we look at and we listen to what maybe people are asking of us, and then we offer non-biased and non-judgmental support in doing so.
Yes, definitely. And now, just to finish things up, Andrea, would you like to then say how they can get onto your website and your helpline? And there's an email as well that they can send to you.
Yeah, so our helpline number is 01-554-3811. And our helpline is manned from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. by trained counsellors or support workers. If you don't get a counsellor or a support worker answering the phone, it can go to an answer machine. If you leave a message, you leave your name, a number, a support worker or counsellor will call you back. But it's due to the volume of calls, I suppose, that we're inundated every day. We had over 9,000 contacts last year alone, so we can be quite busy as well. We also have info at Anyman and crisis at Anyman. So if somebody wants to send in an email, it's crisis at Anyman, and we will email them back. If they want to make an appointment to sit and talk on a one-to-one basis, if they ring the office or they ring the helpline number, they can make that appointment. They can ring, they don't have to give any information about themselves. It's completely confidential. You know, it's usually, as Emma said, that first step. You know, it's the first step to, with men, a lot of it is, I'm not quite sure, is this domestic abuse? You know, is this happening to me? So taking that first step as well. We also offer, you know, legal information over the phone. And because we're national, we could be anywhere in the country, we'll give them legal information. We will we run parenting classes as well, which will be starting up in September, and counselling services around the country that we will find for that person. But take that first step and contact the helpline.
Definitely.
Well, it's been insightful, definitely, to speak to both of you, and the work that you're doing is tremendous, absolutely fantastic, and it's great that those services are available. And thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you,
Emma, for being on the phone there. You're very good for joining me, and I'm sure we'll speak to you again
absolutely.
In the
thank
future.
Thank you, Adrienne, for having me.
Not at all. Thank you, Andrea. Thanks, Emma. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Take care.